Dating Georgia. I am your host, Brittany Bangert. While it's easy to find information on those leaders that have had a national impact, what about those right here at home? This podcast is about our communities, our leaders, local mayors, executive directors of our charities and nonprofits, our historical societies, our religious institutions. Leading Georgia is a community podcast by them for us. So join me as we learn about our leaders right here at home. This is Leading Georgia. Today's episode features Stacy Cooper, Executive Director of the Goshen Valley Boys Ranch. Leading with passion was a theme of Stacy's interview, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here is Stacy Cooper, Executive Director of the Goshen Valley Boys Ranch. Well, Stacy, thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Executive Director of Goshen. I wanted to start, as we always do, with your origin story. So where were you born and raised?
So I was born and raised in Gwinnett County and then Walton County, Georgia. So I spent most of my life in those, in either Grayson or in Loganville. And then after I graduated from college, I actually decided to move to South Africa for 2 years.
Wow.
And so for most of my life, I lived in Georgia and have really experienced Southern culture and what it means to be Georgian, but did have the opportunity to experience what it meant to live in a different culture, which was opportunity.
South Africa, side note, is a bucket list item for me. Mosul Bay specifically is where the jumping great whites, as you're nodding your head, you know, why did you choose South Africa?
So I actually went through a program called the Journeyman Program, and I decided they had large binders for each continent. And so you got to go look through the binders and they had jobs in them and decide where you were going to move to and then interview for those positions. And so I chose South Africa because the position there was working with adolescents. I've kind of always known that I wanted to do that since I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
I said I wanted to be a child psychologist, which isn't too far from what I'm doing now. It's kind of cool. I felt like God really laid it on my heart that that was what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And is sort of all I've ever done. You know, from ninth grade on, I worked in my church youth group, worked in the Boys and Girls Club, you know, went off to college and worked with adolescents there as well. I did spend a little bit of time working with kindergartners, and I thought that was rainbow and sunshine and butterflies every day. And I thought maybe
amazing description.
Yeah, maybe this is what I should do with my life. But I really thought, you know, these kids, most people look at a little 5-year-old and think rainbow and sunshine and butterflies.
Yeah.
Most people do not look at a 17-year-old boy who's angry and pitching a fit and feel that same way. And I felt like that when I looked at those kids. And I felt like that was maybe something that God had given me, was eyes to see that. And that that was really what I was called to do. So I went off to college and studied psychology and family studies. And then when I graduated, I had looked at a program called the Journeyman Program and went and I interviewed for that position. And so I moved to South Africa for 2 years and I worked with adolescents there doing life skills, doing after school Bible studies, doing HIV AIDS education.
Yes.
I did some community organization work where I was able to do some HIV AIDS testing in the schools.
Wow.
Because that was still somewhat taboo for kids. They didn't know if they were positive or not and were scared to find out. Worked with a lot of pregnant and parenting teens there, and also worked with some undocumented immigrants who were living in South Africa but didn't have any paperwork because several of them were orphans, and in order for the government there to do anything for them, they had to have a massive amount of paperwork that was impossible to get. So helping them kind of navigate that system. And that was an amazing opportunity. It is a beautiful country and the great whites. And I got to do the world's tallest bungee jump. And
You can keep that experience to yourself, but I'm tall enough. It's 6 feet. I don't need to get higher and bounce, but,
7.5 seconds of free fall.
So. Nope. I get sick in the car when we bounce. So I'm good. That's incredible. I obviously, from my reaction, I had no idea. So it's, jealousy or envy for the country. And then of course that work, that's amazing. Absolutely. So you come back here. How did you find your way to Goshen?
So right before I went to interview for that position and go through the binders and pick which country I was moving to for 2 years, I met a man. And so we started dating because I told him I'm moving to Africa, and then we started dating. So we were trying to figure out what does that mean to live in a different country for 2 years, you know, long distance. And so he actually came and visited me a year into that. And then when I moved back here, he had taken a position in Cherokee County and was working at a technical college. And so I moved up here, got married to him and moved up here, and then got a position working with a place called Cherokee Youth Works. Mm-hmm. And so I worked at first as a job coach, and then ended up transitioning into eventually becoming the program manager of that program. But we worked with adolescents, again, who had dropped out of high school, most of them, who were needing to get a GED, find employment, kind of figure out their lives. And that was an incredible opportunity. Those kids were amazing. It was like you got to be a cheerleader for kids who kind of had nobody cheerleading for them, you know, and being able to fulfill that role was extremely just special. And you felt like, wow, I get to have this opportunity to see something in this kid and really speak into their life in that way.
Yes, I can totally, I agree. And I say that from experience. And so I say this, not, this interview is not about myself, but I served in AmeriCorps in DC. And what had years previous been that exact spot, been known as the murder capital, but they converted it to affordable housing. Some people paid $0 in rent, and I think the max was like $100 or $200. But I taught GED classes to 21-year-olds. So you're out of school because of violence, because of you just never went. The females were pregnant. So absolutely I helped a few students get their GED and then a few parents as well. And to see that, like, because you smiled the entire time you were telling that story. So I absolutely understand that is my point with my short story there. So please continue. I cut you off.
No, not at all. So yes. I know exactly what you're talking about because you go to the graduations.
Yes.
They would have graduations at the technical college for the kids who had made it through their GED program. And you just see these parents who kind of thought their kids were never going to make it through this, or friends, or it was like a riotous, raucous party, you know, to watch them go across that stage and get that.
Yeah. So in my experience, the children inspired the parents.
Absolutely.
Sometime. Did you have the same?
Yes, for sure. But you saw kids who maybe had made it somehow to 11th grade in school, but they couldn't read, and
had a
17-year-old who couldn't point out where North America was on a map and started naming oceans when I was pointing at continents. So, you know, some kids who had some serious deficits, who typically had a lot of family issues, likely should have been in foster care, but most of whom did not end up in foster care for whatever reason. And
that's amazing. That's right here.
Yeah.
That's Cherokee County. So, right. So, you know, we bordered Cobb and Fulton is 20 minutes down there. That is amazing. We're not too far from even, you know, the ranch up here, not too far from the, you know, Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. And to think that a child, no matter the age, can't point out a continent on a map that sometimes maybe we take for granted. As I was speaking to you before we went on air, thank goodness I didn't have to teach my son all of fourth grade, my youngest son, but taking that for granted that, So again, I cut you right off. No.
You're good. So, yeah, so I did that, and that was a tremendous experience. I really enjoyed it. And then the thing that was challenging about that environment was a big piece of why I do the work is because of my faith, and a big piece of what I believe about what it takes for kids to overcome the amount of challenges and the hands that they've been dealt is true healing from God. And those weren't necessarily things, not that they were discouraged there, but it wasn't necessarily a Christian organization.
Right.
In addition to that, we only had the kids for a few hours a week, and then they were going back into their home environments that were crazy. You know, they always had insane stories every time they would come about what had happened over the last weekend.
Man.
And so I thought, you know, these kids, every time I talk to them, they say to me, I want to do something different than my parent. I want to be different. I'm not going to end up on meth. I'm not going to end up in jail. I'm not going to end up unemployed or in an abusive relationship or whatever it was
that's that they hard
didn't want to head toward.
For a child to be absorbing that.
Right.
That's hard. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, they didn't necessarily, they knew where they wanted to end up,
yeah.
but they didn't necessarily know how to get there, because it's really not, I think I came to realize this in that role, it's really not about the big decisions you make in your life that lead you a certain direction. It's your little every single day decisions that you make that lead you somewhere.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, I really want these kids to understand what it takes. And then I heard about Goshen. And Goshen Valley Boys Ranch provides house parents who actually live in the home with the kids, who are married and have a healthy marriage and are able to show the kids, like, what does it mean to have conflict and to resolve conflict? What does it mean to be a mom and to be a dad? What does it mean to discipline children and to love them and to nurture them? And what does it mean to just be a responsible adult? And so these kids get the opportunity for us, and we get the opportunity to show them what it means to make all those little decisions to take them in the right direction. And that's different because it gives them more of an opportunity to actually choose that. It's like almost if they don't know, then they can't choose to do that.
Absolutely.
But here we get to show them what that looks like and walk hand in hand, not just for a few hours, but day in, day out with our boys, as long as they're living with us, to show them something different. And
absolutely.
We're also a faith-based environment. And those things, I felt like, wow, I really want to make a difference in the lives of kids. And this feels like it's a great place to do that.
Yeah.
And so I joined the Goshen team about almost 7 years ago now.
That's incredible. And it's gorgeous up here. Oh my gosh. What an amazing place for these boys to grow up and for you all. I say to work, but this, of course it's passion. You know, it does not strike me already that you do this just for a paycheck. So, can you tell us a little about the history of this location up here? Cause it's humongous. I know I have volunteered a couple times and I know I've not seen near the entirety of the campus, so to speak, ranch, cause you call it a ranch. So can you talk to us about the history of how this came to be?
Sure, absolutely. So John Blind was actually the founder of Goshen Valley Boys Ranch. And he was attending a church in Atlanta, Redeemer Lutheran Church, and heard them talking about how they wanted to start a boys ranch, but that they did not actually have land in order to do that. And so he started thinking about it, praying about it, and he and his wife Connie had purchased part of this property to retire on one day. And so he actually decided, instead of doing that with it, to turn it into Goshen Valley Boys Ranch and for him to lead the charge. So he has actually a background in working for IBM and being a venture capitalist, and was very much in the corporate world, not nonprofit world. And so he's really an entrepreneur at heart and a salesman, and has those kind of skill sets. So he brought that I think a lot of people, when they get into nonprofit, don't necessarily have that background of like knowing how to build a business into this work. And so in 2001, you know, after a lot of acquisition of different pieces of the property, they actually accepted their first child into what is now the Sims Cottage, which is our little house down this way. And now, since that time, since 2001, I haven't added up the numbers this year, but I would say we're probably over 550 kids that have been served here at Goshen Valley Boys Ranch.
That is incredible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I say that not just hearing it, but seeing it firsthand, as I have on those a few of the service days, that, oh my gosh. So we're going to get to all that, I know.
Sure. But well, John's son, Zach, actually is the CEO now.
Oh, so yeah.
John retired a couple of years ago and passed the torch to Zach, who has taken that on and has done
an amazing
job leading it.
I say family business, but again, this doesn't, of course, you need money to function, but this is not a business, right? Oh my gosh. So it, like, passion just keeps coming to my mind here. So I of course, like, protecting all anonymity of the boys here, but how do boys get placed here?
So our kids are all in the foster care system. So what that means is that they have been removed from the custody of their either biological parents or family members, whomever they were with, adoptive parents sometimes, and that they have been taken into the foster care system. And so we receive referrals through the Department of Family and Children's Services. And I mean, we've accepted, I guess, 3 kids over the past week, and all of those kids, we, you know, got a referral. It's a little bit of documentation about that child. And then we'll call and ask some follow-up questions and determine if we feel like they would be a good fit for Goshen and they could be successful in this environment. 'Cause we are more of a family environment. We don't, you know, you didn't go through a big gate to get here. Right, and there's no barbed wire, and you know, we don't have fences and all of that. So, so we make sure that the kids, we feel like they can be successful in this kind of environment. And then if so, then we have an open bed available, then we accept them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what are the, can you even say the age ranges?
Yeah, absolutely. So our youngest is 8 and our oldest is usually about 18. So when we have 8-year-olds, usually kids who are under 12, we have them because we have their older sibling here as well.
Oh, okay.
I will tell you, one little guy showed up and I was like, wow, he needs a car seat. He's so tiny. It was this adorable little 8-year-old. He's been with us 1.5 years now and he's just the sweetest. But yeah, those little guys sometimes can really appreciate this environment because said, it's very much like nature and outdoors and really engage them in a lot of activities and keep them physically healthy. And they love that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I want to ask about the volunteer days. Forgive me for not remembering the exact
second Saturday.
Uh-huh. Thank you. An organization I'm with, we deemed it service days, the times we've come up here, but,
sure.
So like for the first time I came up here, for example, you know, groups of us went into the houses to clean. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. One of the houses were younger kids. So, you know, it's the younger kids that are helping you clean and you kind of have to sneak behind them.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, it struck me for both houses, just how happy these kids are. And of course, some of them are quiet, more reserved, like we're a bunch of strangers cleaning your house. I get it. One of my favorite memories of my life, I can tell you already, is that I played piano with one of the boys. Aww. He had composed something. I walked over, figured out what key, and just added something on top. And it was, oh my gosh, like I guess I wanted to ask the, do you see, because when we talk about foster care, there is a stigma, whether true or not, that these are children that, there's going to be some kind of mental anguish, right? There's going to be, you've been through something that nobody wants to go through, right?
Right. So
because I know there's a large staff, how do things like that of, you have a new boy come in, or even, you know, cause I know there's visitation. Mm-hmm. If a boy has a negative reaction, you know, how are those things handled for the kids?
Do you mean if they're really struggling emotionally, how do we handle that?
That's a much better way of putting it. Thank you.
Just wanted to make sure I understood what you were asking. So definitely we have kids who are struggling. I mean, you're talking about the trauma that they've been through, and a lot of people think about that, you know, and that's absolutely there. They've watched, you know, domestic violence. They've watched substance abuse. They've, you know, not necessarily had food or the lights on or, you know, water in their house, or just depends on that child, what they've gone through. But most of them, especially like the little guys who will just kind of, as they're talking, say things and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I had a little guy that we had who was 9 when he got here, and he talked about on his 5th birthday how his dad took shots with him, you know.
Oh my
so
God.
Some of our kids have been through some crazy things before they get to us that, you know, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But it is also traumatic, regardless of how challenging that home life was, for them to be removed from their parents. You know, whether something, and I think we can probably all know this from our own life, from some experience, whether something is healthy or not, it is normal to us. And because of that, there's some level of comfort in that.
Absolutely.
And so obviously we have a lot more structure and, hey, we've got chores and, hey, let's get our homework done. And, hey, you know, let's get out and play and not just play video games all day and all those kind of
boys
things.
Boys want to play video games?
Or, I know, right? Who knew?
Who
or their cell phones, you know?
And you have, I noticed that, like, the huge dining room tables in those houses. So there's the family style meals.
Yeah, they do family dinner. dinner together, all those things that, yes, we're like, oh, that's so healthy. And, you know, yes, it is. But also it might be really unusual or kind of intimidating for our kids. And so it's all about how do we set those expectations, but set them in and set that structure and set that rhythm, which is all stuff that is good for children. And we know that from research and, you know, and just from experience. But how do we set it in a way that feels as much like we're understanding of where they're coming from as well, so that they can feel comfortable to be who they are and comfortable that like we care about them and are willing to meet with them where they're at instead of expecting them to meet some ridiculous standard right at the beginning of them getting here. So how do we ease them into that, into this setting in a way that feels comfortable? I wrote a little Bible study thing that I sent out a couple of years ago, and I refer back to this sometime. I say it's like sometimes what we do and what we're asking for out of our kids is like asking a toddler to pole vault.
Mm.
And so I think that it's like that sometimes. It feels like, yes, you know, a 16-year-old should be able to do X, Y, Z, whatever it is that you're asking them to be able to do. But has this child ever been asked to do this before? What has happened in his past that's making this hard for him? You know, what are the roadblocks there? Well, he doesn't trust you enough to tell you what the roadblocks are, or he doesn't know how to say what they are, or maybe he doesn't even know what they are. So all of that is like, how do we untangle all of that in therapy and through relationship? You know, that to me is the biggest piece. Is that even for you, if somebody was going to come to you and tell you, hey, you need to change these things in your life, you know, you might have some words for them if that's some like either random person that you've never met before or somebody that you don't trust has your best interests at heart.
Right.
And you just feel like they're picking at you. So if we're going to say to our kids, hey, we need to address these challenging behaviors, we want to change, we need to morph into something different, then they need to be able to care what we say, which means that we need to be those people. We have to be trustworthy. We have to be caring and nurturing and patient and kind and do the things that they need that are going to make them feel loved and cared about, not just impose what we imagine would be healthy onto them.
Yeah.
So all of it is, I guess, a big balance. And to answer your first question, yes, it's hard for them. And yes, they have been through a lot. And so they have a lot to overcome. And then in the middle of that, you know, they're, it's like, hey, now it's time, you know, got pulled out of your family last Friday and now it's Tuesday and it's time to go start going to a new school and meet new friends and do geometry. And by the way, it's 2/3 of the way through the school year and you're transitioning into a new class.
Yeah.
It's a lot of transition for them. So we really just try to be as caring and understanding as we can be during that.
Yeah. I love that you shared so much of that because, you know, I have friends that are, you know, foster parents or that were in the foster system. And so that's as much as I have been exposed, to things like that. You think of like, just, you know, growing up, I would think, oh, a foster kid, like that's heartbreaking one. Mm-hmm. And then two, you're going from family to family, but all of those other things that come with that school, are you going to school? Which school are you going to? Does this new school going to say, actually, you know, like you were alluding to before with the boy, actually you are not on the grade level you should be. So let's bump you back. What does that do psychologically and emotionally? So, so I love that all of that, I would expect nothing different, but I love that. Yes. All of that is part of the purpose of the ranch.
Yeah. So I can talk a little bit about sort of how we address each of those areas.
Yeah.
So we actually have sort of formulated our staff around some of the challenges that our kids have and tried to target those. So we have a recreation director who oversees activities with the kids. So
I'm sure that's a very boring job, isn't it?
It's awesome. So
I bet. Wow.
The kids love to do activities, almost all of them. And the ones who don't at some point, like learn to really enjoy that. So we do group activities like ultimate frisbee and flag football and something called comet ball and kickball and basketball and all the
things. Like fireball and friends, like something a kid made up.
It's something that the activities director made up.
And, like I don't think I've played
flag football amped up, I would say.
All right.
Yes. So all kinds of different games that they play, and we got laser tag guns and a set of kayaks and a set of mountain bikes and all kinds of fun things for the kids to do because we believe that especially if like our kids are addicted to nicotine or they've been using marijuana every day or something like that, that it's really important not to just say like, hey, I'm going to take away all your coping skills because they're unhealthy and then I'm going to give you nothing back. You should probably like try and deep breathe through it. You know, yeah.
That's I love that you say work. Coping skills, because again, that's as an adult and, right. and outside of an environment like this, like, oh, that's your vice. Stop right. it. Like for me, if you put Hershey Kisses in front of me, yep, I'm going to take it.
Right.
But coping skills, of right. course, and for these ages. So,
right. God, so it's that. Like, how do we give a healthy coping skill yeah. to replace an unhealthy coping skill?
Yeah. Wow.
Understanding that you're like stepping into this child's life in a moment that feels very overwhelming and stressful. And then you're taking away the things that they did when they were yeah. overwhelmed and stressed. You know, it's yeah. like, how do we infuse a lot of positive things into that? And so the activities are a part of how we do that. So that's yeah. recreation. And then clinically, we have a clinical director who oversees all the therapeutic services. So we partner with an agency that comes out and provides therapeutic services to our kids, including individual counseling, family counseling, sometimes sibling counseling, substance abuse counseling.
Wow.
Something called behavior aid, another mm-hmm. thing called CSI that's kind of life skills related with anger management or hygiene, those kind of specific yeah. skills. So lots of different things that they have the opportunity to have therapeutic interventions with while we're here. So that's the clinical piece. And then we have a medical coordinator, because these kids, a lot of them are so far behind with medical things. You know, they might yeah. just not have been to the doctor in a while, or they go to the dentist and all of a sudden you realize they have, I literally had a kid who had 16 cavities.
Oh, goodness.
So they can only do like two or three at a time. So oh. that's a lot of trips to the dentist.
Bless his heart with the swollen cheeks. Yes, and the, oh, gosh. Yes.
Yeah, and almost all of our kids are adolescents, so yeah. wisdom teeth getting taken out.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, almost all of them. We try and get as much done as we possibly can while they're here,
wow.
knowing that, A, they have insurance while they're here, and B, we get to make sure that those things are getting done. Mm. But that just means a lot of intentionality in how we're caring for them. So she oversees all of that. She's also a registered nurse, so, you know, when somebody twists an ankle on the football field or,
yeah.
you know, trips on something and hurts himself, she's able to look at those things and determine right. further medical.
While playing Comet Ball.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I know someone wanted to start a rugby team here. I was like, no. Too many hospital visits in my future. We can't do that.
So. I understand. My eldest does hockey, and it was actually my youngest that got injured at one of his games one time. I'm like, why is your head bleeding? But the hockey player is fine. But either way, oh my gosh. So yeah, I support the decision for no rugby, for it just put me down as a vote for no.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we have plenty of other exciting activities for the kids with that one being crossed off. So, but of course the kids want to do the most intense things and the
of
most
course.
Exciting ones.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, snake, let me pick it up. I don't think it's poisonous. But I actually grew up with three brothers. So I joked to the boys the other day, because they have a couple of bearded dragons, new ones, and it's little bitty baby ones in one of the houses. And I think they always expect me to scream every time that I, you know, they have a lizard or a snake. But I grew up with three brothers, so I'm like, ah, I've had snakes. Let me see him. He's kind of cute, you know.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I saw my husband and I have been fishing a lot since like the COVID and everything. And I saw a snake yesterday, and today went out and bought like hiker pant and boots, because I'm like, you will not get me. No, I can't. I'm terrified of snakes. Aww. So thank goodness you are in this position that you can, and I'm sure that's just something else that helps that, I'm sure the boys would love to tease you endlessly if you were the person and whomever may go into a house and actually squeal, that just deepens the relationship.
Yes. I feel like they're a little disappointed that I'm not afraid of the snakes and the lizards, but that's okay.
So if I can ask, before I get to that, you also, I've noticed because I follow social media and from a family friend that works here and just adores it here and always has, you know, hear stories from her, that you celebrate the boys that graduate.
Yeah, we do.
As well.
So that's perfect transition. So we have an education coordinator who actually oversees that piece, because that is a part that oftentimes has been really challenging for our kids. Their life has been really stressful outside of school, so it's been hard to focus inside of school. And beyond that, I think just having the special education services in place that they actually need requires them to be in a school for an extended period of time so that they can do data collection and documentation, and you know, an engaged parent is helpful in that. And so our kids haven't necessarily always gotten all of that if they've been, I had a kid who had been to, I don't know, it was something like 16 different elementary schools.
What?
Yeah.
So. I was expecting you to say maybe like 5 or 6 schools total. Right. And that's a high school, but 16 right. elementary schools. Oh,
just
my gosh.
Just bounced and bounced and bounced because the mom couldn't keep a place. Yeah. Every time that the rent would come up, she would move.
That's like every 2 months mm-hmm. for, oh my gosh.
Right. So a lot of transition. And that child, of course, is like never really going to acclimate anywhere.
Of course.
And not
yeah.
really get what he needs. So then we try to go in and expedite the system because the goal of the educational system is to keep the kid in the least restrictive environment possible. Mm. And so they try to do that and create some hurdles to just leapfrogging them to something that's overly restrictive or supportive. But for our kids, a lot of times they've just been like drowning in the less restrictive environment. So right. it's like, how do we navigate within that system to get him what he needs as quickly as possible?
Right.
And, Cherokee County is amazing. They're really collaborative, really kind, look out for our kids. So that's been extremely helpful.
And you have tutors here as well for the boys.
We do. So through Title I funding, they actually bring out tutors twice a week and they come out and work with the boys. It's actual Cherokee County school teachers who come out here and spend their time doing that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So some of them, it's like, this is your math homework because I am your math teacher.
Yeah.
You know, they actually know the boys, which is tremendously helpful.
It just sounds like building relationship. So you mentioned clinical, educational, medical, mm-hmm. like that's all different aspects of life that we all need.
Right.
And so you're also teaching the boys how to build, maintain those relationships, which I, as we were saying before, for like the behavioral, mm-hmm. the CSI, I'm sure that's part of it, is the social and behavioral aspects of just being a kid in general, just being a human being in general, right?
Absolutely. I often say that, you know, we could teach our kids to quote unquote behave. We can teach them to do a lot of things, but ultimately I think the thing that we really need to teach them is how to connect.
Hmm.
Because I've told kids often, like, you've got to let this wall down, because if you don't, like, you could be successful, but you are going to be very lonely, and I don't want that for you, you know, because when you think about like the richness of life, it's not really in how much money you're making or how capable you are of driving or doing bills or whatever. You need to be able to do all those things for sure. But ultimately, like, the thing that brings joy to your life, when you're going to think about like what makes you light up, it's those connections that you have. And
yeah.
that's why I really appreciate Cherokee County, is because they really do connect to our kids. You're giving an example of you coming in and playing the piano with that child. Yeah. So a lot of places like us are very kind of isolative, and mm-hmm. sometimes the kids' behaviors are prohibitive to them necessarily just inviting the community in the way that we do.
Right.
But we're able to really engage the community in what the kids are doing.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I think because people have this abstract idea, just like when I was in South Africa, people would ask me, oh, were there like lions in your backyard? And I'm like, no, there was a mall 5 minutes down the road from me, you know, but they have this idea in their head.
Right.
And I think it's kind of the same way with foster care. It's like, right. you haven't experienced it, and you have this idea of who foster children are, but you haven't actually had an opportunity to get to know them and connect with them mm-hmm. or play the piano with them or clean house or whatever it is with them. But then it actually puts some data and some details into that void that might be filled with kind of misinformation
right.
and allows you to realize these are just kids.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. they have challenges, they have behaviors, they have things to overcome, they have experiences that I wish I could erase for them.
Yeah.
Yes. But ultimately they're just kids. I remember taking a group of kids kayaking one day, and I just remember looking at them and thinking, wow, these boys have really, like, this one was on meth, and this one came from this horrible situation, and this one, you know, was, you know, 3 grades behind in school, and this one was involved in drug dealing 3 years ago, whatever it was, like really
right.
tough behaviors and backgrounds. And they're all like splashing each other and giggling, you know, on kayaks, and they're 17 years old. And you just think that really is a lot of what has been taken from our kids is the opportunity to play and to be children, because they had to grow up in kind of all the wrong ways too quickly. And we get to rewind that somewhat and say, hey, you're going to have these house parents who are going to look out for you. You're going to have this environment that allows you to play and engage and enjoy, that you don't have to worry about if you have food tonight. You don't have to worry about like how you're going to get where you need to go tomorrow. Like, we're going to worry about that. And you're just going to worry about you and being a kid.
Yeah. That's, I imagine, you know, you describe it, and of course, people picture it in their heads, but sitting there, I imagine you just took a moment for yourself to be like, oh my gosh. So I want to ask you, a friend of mine, when I was discussing something with one of my kids, mentioned parenting with intent. And I had never heard that before. I'm just going to say, my friend Kendra coined it, and we'll just give that to her. But it really struck me what she said. And I was like, oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it sounds very much like you all are leading with intent, then, that there is of everything you've described, there is an absolute purpose behind each step to what happens here. Even the boys who are going to come with you know, amazing work ethics, you know, that they're out there right now cleaning up, you know, things like that, that they have their chores, that they're learning team building skills just by being in a house, relying on one, things like that. There's an intent behind everything. But I would like to ask, because this is, like I said, passion, and of course, how can you not separate yourself from that as a leader? Then, is there ever, with work like this, is there ever a point that you do have to separate yourself and, you know, for the harder times, that it's harder to absorb, or is that just more fuel that you feel that, you know, you try to empathize, and then that's just going to push you harder, kind of thing?
So I think for me, that's a really interesting question. I think for me that I am very different than a lot of people who do this work, and that I don't believe in creating walls. I think boundaries are important, and that I've been married for 11 years, and I think it's important for me to not look at my cell phone for periods of time and to pay attention to my husband.
Yeah.
But outside of that connection, I really believe in leaning into the work and in being in relationship and in being willing to see my own personal challenges and try to overcome those. I try to be really transparent about like my own issues and what I'm working on and how I'm working to progress, and encourage our adults and our kids to do that. So instead of saying like, hey, this is work and I've got to be professional and kind of act like I have it all together, and then I'm going to go into my personal life and those things are very separate, it just doesn't really work like that in this kind of field to me. Not well. I think it just wouldn't feel, I couldn't feel genuine if I were to do it that way.
Right.
It just wouldn't be my personality because that's not who I am. But I mean, I think some people do that. I think it's okay with me to cry. It's okay with me to be sad. It's okay with me to mourn and to grieve the loss of kids or missing them or, you know, wanting something different than what they're choosing for their life right now. All of that. Because I think that you have to have that in order to also have the joys and the happy moments and the positive things and the success. And I don't think you could be as appreciative to have the second if you didn't have the first.
That's interesting, and that's why I asked the question, with the leading with intent, is because if you're trying to teach by showing, you know, for these boys, then of course you would have to do all of that. But since you're, I asked specifically because you are the executive director, so you know, out there playing Comet Ball, or you know. I mean, I assume you go out sometimes and play, but,
not Comet Ball,
but, you know, there's just some more, and we'll get to this in a second, some more transactional things that you have to do that maybe some of the other staff don't have to do. And of course this is very different from being the nurse,
sure.
You know, so that's why I asked that specifically.
Well, I think that's a good question. I think that I have to do enough of the engaging with the boys in order to, kind of fill myself to do the administrative side of what I'm asked to do for my job, because then it feels like there's kind of a purpose behind that. The other thing that I think, I've watched other young women in this field and young men go through this same experience, and it's the same one I did. But I think that you start off and you directly connecting with the kids is what fulfills you. And then over time, watching, like today, I had a staff member who's been with us for 2 years, and he's going off to teach high school at Sprayberry in August and be a lacrosse
coach. I say boo
coach.
Because those were our rivals. I went to Lassiter. Boo.
That's funny. But he, today, to be able to think about how much he's grown in the 2 years yeah. he's been here and hear the boys and everybody else like talk about how much they loved him. We had a lunch for him today. That makes me happy because yeah. we took good care of him and he grew and blossomed while he was here and he took care of the boys and loved them well. And it's like you start to feel fulfillment in that side of things yeah. as much as you feel fulfillment in directly. I still love directly connecting with the kids when yeah. I get to go fill in a house. It's like, I don't know, Disneyland for a week to me to be able to do that. I love that. But
I will tell you, I've cleaned more fans here than yeah. I have in my own house ever.
Well, you probably don't have any auditors in your house. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So that's really interesting because obviously this is a boys' ranch. Like you serve the foster the boys in the foster system, but there you know you have interns and right. there are people working here mm-hmm. too. Do you divide the way you, I feel like I know the answer, but I'm not going to tell you what I'm assuming
yeah.
you're going to say. Do you separate how you lead on either side of that, or is it one and the same?
Do you mean with the boys and with the boy, staff?
Yeah.
I think it's the same for me, honestly.
That was my assumption.
Okay. you were asking me before this about kind of my leadership style.
Yeah.
And I think of the three that you named, I think servant leadership is mm-hmm. what I would say I definitely buy into. I believe in doing things with people. I believe in delegating so you can be effective at your job. But I also believe that there's never something that I wouldn't do here.
Right.
I think at this point, I literally have done everyone's job at some point. And I would not want it to be a different way where mm-hmm. it was like I sat in my little ivory tower somewhere and dictated what everyone did. That would feel very odd mm-hmm. and, again, disingenuous to kind of who I am. So being able to be there for people and support them and do something alongside of them mm-hmm. and no matter what it is, of course I'm willing to help
right.
Is really important to me because I want everyone to feel that way.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah, coming into this, I assumed of those the big three, as I'm calling them, mm-hmm. the transformational, transactional, servant leadership. I was like, well, of course she's going to say servant leadership, but let's see what happens. I actually had a guest previously that said situational leader, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, that fits in there too, absolutely, mm-hmm. because based on the situation, we're all a little different as is needed. I imagine you're different when you're having a staff meeting versus when you're out there. On you know playing with the kids
because sure.
So I gosh I like this is fascinating interview I love this is there something as far as the like strategic plan for mm-hmm. Goshen mm-hmm. Can you share any plans at all?
Sure. So I think I'll have to speak a little broader
yeah.
into
yeah.
Goshen than necessarily just the Boys Ranch, because a lot of people don't know this, but we actually have four different mm-hmm. programs here. So we have Goshen Valley Boys Ranch that obviously I've been talking about.
Yeah.
And then we also have an agency called Goshen New Beginnings that was birthed out of Goshen Valley Boys Ranch, because as our kids got older, we realized, man, they need a program where they can kind of learn to launch for the kids who have not found a permanent family. And so that program works with 18 to 21 year olds, now works with males and females.
Wow.
And those kids either live in homes in Canton or apartments down in Canton, and they're working, going to school or both, and getting ready to like be ready to go out into the real world. So
wow.
they start off by paying all their bills and taking care of them and doing all of that. And then as the program progresses, they actually say, okay, well, we're going to drop the money in your account, but you're going to pay your bills. And by the way, every time that you earn money, you have to save 50% of it.
Wow.
And we're going to help you, you know, figure out how to get a car and do life skills every week and all that kind of stuff to really be able to support them. And then eventually they move into their own apartments. They're paying their own bills. And then it's this like graduated independence. Yeah,
what
concept.
An amazing foundation that, because yeah. I was going to ask about that. What happens when the boys age out, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. So at 18, yeah. they can actually in Georgia, they can stay in foster care until they're 21 years old. And so, but then it's a choice once they're 18.
Okay.
So you have some kids who are, you know, I want freedom and, you know, this structure and expectations and I have to show up for this and I have rules is not what I want when I'm 18, you know? But for the kids who recognize that as an opportunity, which a significant number of them do, then they're able to have that support instead of kind of what I call the cliff, because it feels like they get to 18 and there's this giant cliff that they just sort of get pushed off of if they don't have an opportunity to have the support they need to really get out there on their own.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And you said, are there other programs?
Yeah. So there's also Goshen Homes. So Goshen Homes is a foster care agency where it's more traditional foster care, where, for instance, you know, you have another job and you maybe have some of your own biological kids, but you also have children who are in foster care who come and live in your house. Mm. So in that program, they actually focus on sibling sets. And so they work on keeping sibling sets together. Yeah. So a lot of times they get separated because they're especially large sibling sets will get separated. And so they will have 2, 3, 4, 5 kids who are a sibling set in one home. And they actually provide enough support that one of the parents can stay home full time and take care of all the needs of the kids while the other one, you know, works outside of the home. And so that program is really unique in that way. They actually have one home that has a large, large sibling set, 11 in that home. And that's just like a family who are
absolutely
amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's Goshen Homes. And then we actually, our newest program is called Goshen Therapeutic Services, or GTS. And that program is focusing, it's kind of launching right now. It's been around for about a year now. And we got our contracts to do things like transportation, supervising visitation between parents and kids in care, doing drug screening, doing assessments, like clinical assessments, like trauma assessments or CCFAs or the child life histories and things like that, as well as doing individual counseling, family counseling, group counseling, substance counseling, all those kind of clinical services. And so that program is going to provide some services to our agencies, but also works with kids who are in the community, and specifically also works with kids who are not in care and they're trying to preserve them in their home, or who have gone home from care and they're needing to just make sure that the family is supported to stay healthy after that.
So is there ever a time where kids have graduated and gone on that they keep in touch?
Most of our kids.
I'd imagine growing up here. Wow.
Well, you say growing up here. Actually, now there's a big emphasis on getting kids back with their families.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them, you know, we might have them 9 to 12 months and then they go home, but even those kids stay in touch. But you were talking about kids who have graduated. You know, we had 3 graduates from here this year. And one of our boys, actually 2 of the boys, because of COVID, we ended up doing digital learning and we have the world's worst internet. It is so bad, so bad. And trying to do that with all these kids, we had to like do 1.5 hours per house and have them filter through the wellness center. And it was challenging. The school system actually bought us hotspots and it was like enough to do 8 kids at a time, but still we have 42. So it was quite an undertaking. But a big portion of that was what a lot of parents ran into, like, I can't do this math, you know, how do I teach him to do it? And so 2 of our kids who were graduating this year stepped up. And I asked them if they would be interested in tutoring. Both of them were in like AP classes and just amazing students and academically gifted. And both of them did that. And it was really neat to see the transformation in those boys. It was funny. Some of the kids started calling them Mr. before their name. And he said, I don't know how I feel about that. And I said, honey, that's a good thing. You know, you're being a leader. And, you know, they're seeing you as that. And that means that you're doing a good job. And one of them in particular would go to the houses even after the school time that we had and go and help the kids. And 2 of the boys said, I learned more from Mr. So-and-so. I can't say his name, but I learned more from him than I did in my whole 8 months of math. You know, he just really did a good job of explaining things and teaching them. And he really thrived in that. And it wasn't only good for the kids, but it was good for those 2 boys as well, because it really, I think, especially with COVID, it can really get you wrapped up in your own world, right? Because there's a lot of isolation and a lot of challenge mm-hmm. that has come along with that and a lot of your own feelings about your own life to go outside of yourself and be able to help others in the midst of something that feels that way. I think we would probably, most of us would say as adults, that that's the healthiest way to deal with that is to remind yourself that it's not all about you and it's that you can help someone else. And so he really blossomed in that. Said he said he wants to come back. I was just talking to him before this, but he wants to come back and do Summer Academy, which is like our summer camp next year. He's going off to UGA to go study pre-med, I think, that or chemistry.
And good for him. Wow. Yeah, really smarty pants. Kid.
He is.
I struggled helping my kid with long division. So. Wow. Do you think, has your leadership style changed over the 7 years you've been here?
Yeah, I think the thing that when I was talking about personal growth, mm-hmm. I think that it's really important for our kids, but also for us to identify, like, what are your areas of weakness and how are you working to grow in those areas? And I think something that I really brought into this work that wasn't working well was the concept that if something didn't feel good, it wasn't right. Mm-hmm. You know, so like wanting to say something that was direct or blunt or honest, but hard was very difficult for me. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. I, you know, wanted to do kind of like the sweet side of social work and love on kids and say positive things and encourage them. And I was a great cheerleader, but a cheerleader and a coach are two different things. Mm. And that's the case with the kids, but it's also the case with adults. And it's important to be able to say difficult things, even if it just makes you want to scream and cry all at the same time. You still need to say them, you know? And so I think that that is an area that I've really tried to grow in. And my team around me has said that I'm in a different place than I was when I started, which is a good feeling. We kind of all talk about, like, hey, what is it that we're working on and how are we growing in that? And that's definitely my area.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, not just because of the people you are serving, mm-hmm. but just I completely agree that that no matter what you're doing, you should be always striving to get better. That perfect is unattainable. You can't get there.
Absolutely.
But you should always strive to achieve it, you know, at the same time.
Sure.
So the last question then I have for you, which is already my favorite question. I've already started making a list of tallying who people are saying, is would you mind sharing three leaders that you admire, that have inspired you, that you wish to emulate, that you've learned from, you know, three leaders.
Okay. Well, I think one would be Louis Zamperini.
Oh, yes.
You know that is?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you read the book or just
seen it? I have listened to the book.
Listened to the book.
Okay. I work... I under normal times, I have like an hour long commute. So I listen to my books. So yes, and it was a very good, there's been a couple films, but, mm-hmm. The one I saw Unbroken. Mm-hmm. Thank Unbreakable is completely different. Yeah. Yes. That's a phenomenal. Yeah. See,
so I love him because the reason I asked you about the book versus the movie is because the movie really doesn't touch on this at all, but the book definitely does. Louis Zamperini is obviously, he was very talented. He was an Olympic runner, went to the Olympics in Berlin, mm-hmm. and then ended up going into the military. And his plane went down in the ocean, like lived through 47 days or something on a life raft, and then was shipwrecked into an island where he was then taken as a prisoner of war, mm-hmm. and went through all of that. And came back to the U.S., got married, but had terrible PTSD and was drinking and just a mess. And his wife started, actually, Billy Graham had started his crusades in California. And so his wife started going to the tent revivals that he was doing, and she got saved and kept talking to him about it. And he was not having that at mm-hmm. all. But they had a newborn. I think he kind of got desperate enough that he realized, like, I need something, and ended up going and got saved himself. And he started a camp working with kids who were starting to get in mm-hmm. trouble. And it was a Christian camp and spoke at a lot of churches. I think anybody who uses challenge in their life to impact other people, that's
absolutely
the kind of leader that I want to emulate.
Oh, yes. Fantastic answer. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I don't know if I have three, but...
you don't have to have three. It's just, this is my favorite number, so it's the one I chose. Good thing my favorite number wasn't like 68.
Yes.
Like, give me 68 people, go.
Yeah, I think my other person would just be somebody that I know. His name is Rod Metcalf, And he had actually adopted two of our boys here. I actually met him when I was working at the GD program where I was before, because he was teaching anger management to kids who were in Department of Juvenile Justice on probation. And he is a school counselor at Woodstock Middle School. And he and his wife, Amy, adopted two boys here. And through this horrible, tragic experience, the younger one actually passed away. He was hit by a car several years ago. And so Rod actually asked, in lieu of flowers, for people to donate toward a basketball court here. And so our outdoor basketball court here is in honor of that young man.
Oh.
And the thing that I told Rod at the funeral is, I said, like, you are the foster, the adoptive parent that I always pray that our kids will get, is like somebody like you. Because they went through so much challenge with the younger one especially, but they just stuck with him, and it was okay that it was hard. I'm sure it wasn't okay, but they kept going even though it was hard, and they never gave up on him. Like, not one day did they give up on him. And he actually comes out and he takes our kids. He's got a boat and lives in Lake Arrowhead, and he takes our kids out and takes them kneeboarding and water skiing, and he always takes a picture of them and he gets it printed out and puts it in a frame. And I that really struck me, because these kids like love those pictures. You see them, they're like all over the ranch, and you just realize like how many of their childhood memories, like, because they've been so transient and because they've been living with people who weren't really their parents, like, they don't have photo albums full of pictures of all of their memories. And so capturing that, he's just so intentional and thoughtful in the way that he just loves people. And there's like 0% of anything that he is asking for in return. He just wants to help. And he's so inspirational to me, just the kind of like human being that he is. I want to be where he's just like incredibly unassuming and giving and kind, and just cares about people.
Yeah, that's amazing. I won't press you for a third.
Okay, thank you.
I can see the stress of like, oh, all right. I have always said that anyone that chooses to work with and or for children, that's a special kind of person. And I say that, like, I think I said this already on an episode, but my middle sister and I, when we were growing up, like, we could not have been more different, to the point of just not talking to each other, because we're kids and I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and you don't, so therefore I don't want to talk to you. But I always knew she'd be an amazing mom and an amazing teacher, that it takes a special kind of person to choose to do that, to choose to ultimately serve our communities by bettering the lives of children. So I have really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm going to be back for more of the second Saturdays. I remembered this time. And absolutely, this is a phenomenal thing you guys are doing up here. Please don't ever stop. It is, of course, I say that, but ultimately the goal is that it is not needed, right? This is a beautiful thing you all are doing. So thank you so much for that, and continue to lead with intent and with that passion. And thank you for sitting down with me today. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
On the next episode, Chef Ashley Keys of Choices, Center for Helping Obesity and Children End Successfully, speaks to us about cooking and leading through nutrition. If you like these episodes and haven't done so already, please subscribe wherever you get podcasts. A helpful rating and a like goes a long way to making sure that we reach the widest audience possible and sharing our leaders and organizations right here in Georgia. This is Brittany Bangert for Leading Georgia.